this is really exciting. Because this is the first time I got to use this toy. The last time we had a presentation, we had the big screen stuck up here and a projector down there, and we were in the way and so on and so forth. So this is really cool. Now, if we just don't mess it up and disappoint everybody, that'd be okay. Pastor asked me to give you I called them the creation shorts. Only God can create amazing creatures, and this is one we're going to look at tonight. Well, I'm going to ask you some questions about it first. I want you to put your thinking cap on and see if you can come up with what I'm describing. It's an amazing creature, okay? So, I want to know what it is. So here's the first clue. Wow, that's small. Okay, I won't do that again. It weighs about 0.17 ounces, or 500 grams, milligrams, or a tenth of a gram, and it fits in the palm of your hand, and it won't hurt you. Okay. Secondly, it travels 2,000 to 3,000 miles in its migration without getting lost. That's a good thing, by the way. It triangulates on the sun for directions, corrections, with its two small antennas. Its eyes detect the ultraviolet light from the sun, and they correct the internal circadian clock that he has in his body. Yes. Okay, he has a second circadian, the first one is in his head. He has a second circadian clock, and I can't read this. So I'm going to bring it up here so I can see it. All right. His eyes detect the ultraviolet. We've got that. His second circadian clock is in each probe, and it time corrects the angle of the sun. It constantly recalibrates the position using the actual angle of the sunlight. And it converts the calculated position into the actual direction it needs to move to get where it's going. When clouds obscure the sun, it uses ultraviolet light as a magnetic compass for direction. If you want to know about that later, I'd be glad to talk to you about it. Its probes contain circadian clocks. They have chemical, wind, and sound detectors in those probes. It can detect its food and water from the special hairs on its legs. Cool. Its compound eyes detect the short wave ultraviolet, that is the A wave, light with magnetosensors in its probes. What is it? Now think about it. What is it? There you go. It's a monarch butterfly. And those are monarch butterflies. Which one of those is the female? I'll give you a clue. That one. Okay. These are wannabes, these butterflies here. This one is a queen butterfly. It mimics a monarch, because a monarch is poisonous. Birds do not like it and cannot eat it. Now, when they get real hungry, they overcome some of that reticence, but then they're reminded very quickly that tastes terrible, and they don't eat it, okay? Most birds, they cannot tolerate it. Secondly, the viceroy, that is the most common one, and that viceroy has the same range that it ranges in, is where the monarch butterflies winter over. So they look the same. So birds have to look real carefully. And then you have soldier butterflies, and this is a little brighter color than the queen, and you'll notice that the lower wings have the white spots on them, whereas the queen does not have any white on them. So a bird has to check this out really quick, because if he gets the wrong one, tastes terrible, okay? So this is not to be scary, but this is a 100-to-1 explosion of the compound eye that's on a butterfly. He can see up, down, back, forward, and to the right and left, all at the same time, in any degree in between 210 degrees around him, both sides. Our brain doesn't work well with that kind of sight. And apparently that's in a picture form, single discrete pictures. How they know that, that's beyond me. But this is the antenna. Now, if you consider the thread that's holding the button on your blouse or your shirt, that's how big this is. That's how big it is. And it has all of this information from a circadian clock, a magnetosensor, a wind sensor, a sound sensor, and as all of those are taken care of in this bulb right at the end, that's where it picks all this up. And it's good enough that the male and the female can smell each other. It's been found up to 10 miles apart. Figure that one out. Okay? Now, how do they do it? Well, this is how they do it. Won't spend a lot of time trying to explain this, but basically what happens is when they want to travel south, they can't follow the sun directly. That's what used to be thought. Well, they just follow the sun. Well, the sun comes up in the west, and so they're flying this way, and then it keeps coming up, and they're flying this way, and then they're flying this way. Well, that doesn't work good going 2,000 miles. When you're going like this, you cover about three or four times the distance. So what you have then is this one shows you at 10 o'clock, the circadian clock with two antennas. Now get a load of this. You're 93 million miles away from the sun, and this little creature is fitting in the palm of your hand, and you have two little antennas that are 3/4 of an inch apart. He can tell where the sun is to orient himself. And they're calculating at 10 o'clock the sun is rising. Not only do they have to compensate for the sun going across the sky, they have to compensate for the azimuth of when the sun moves and what time of year it is. And I'll tell you about that in just a minute. So this is everything that's contained in one of those antennas. It has a magneto compass. It has a time correcting solar compass. It smells olfactory nerve. It can smell pheromones, hormones that are put out. It can tell which way the wind's blowing. And the reason that it has the ultraviolet light is because it has to have some form of magnetic compass to know where it's going when the clouds come in. You get big clouds in and you think they start going around in circles. And that's not good if you're going to do that. So here we are then. So how do the monarchs know when to head out to the winter? Well, this goes back to determining where the degree of the sun is, the azimuth of the sun. So when it gets late into August, these days are getting shorter. The temperatures are getting cooler. We have the case of where the milkweed starts to die and age, so they don't have a place to put their young on those leaves because there aren't going to be any more. And so they also need to get nectar. Flowers have gone through the biggest portion of their blooming and everything. And so, you know, there's not going to be any food pretty soon. And when these events happen, a physiological thing takes place inside the butterfly. They go into this thing called reproductive diapause. They stop the ability to produce and to reproduce and conserve all the energy in both the male and the female for the 3,000-mile flight home. That's what they do. So the fourth generation, now, it used to be thought that the monarch butterfly flew all the way up to Canada, turned around, flew all the way back down. He doesn't do that. They don't do that. What they do is this fourth generation is the generation that's going to live for about 8 or 9 months. The generations in between, the first, second, and third, only live for 2 to 6 weeks. Now, they reproduce prolifically. They plant hundreds of eggs on the magnitude of in 6 weeks' time, 300 to 400, maybe 500. Some have even gone as high as 700, and they put one egg on each plant. So they've got to see a lot of plants. So, and these are insects, and their main job is pollinating. That's what they do. They're not as good at it as the bees are because they're bigger. Bees can go right in there and buzz. But you saw that proboscis curled up on the, it looks like a mini trunk. If you think of the trunk of an elephant, that's what that's like, except it's only that long. That's about an inch. That's all the longer it is. So here we have then that the eastern monarchs, and I'll show you the picture why there's eastern monarchs, western monarchs, and Floridian monarchs. Don't leave me out. Now, so they're going to overwinter in a spot called Michoacán State, in northwest of Mexico. And a little tidbit of useless information. Well, it's not historical. Mexico is a state. Mexico City is a city within the state, and the country is called Mexico because of the state. Okay? So now you've got the real story. I didn't realize that. And this place, Michoacán, is considered by many the soul of Mexico. Of course, it's pagan, godless, and Catholic through and through, but they are where the bulk of the monarch butterflies are, in the trees that are up in the mountains. And there, you can see how they're 9,000 feet up. So when you listen to a video of somebody that's going to show you these, they're huffing and puffing, because they're 9,000 to 10,000 feet in the air, and this is where the butterflies are. Okay, this is the flight path. Now you'll see there's a western side to the west of the Rockies. They can't get over the Rockies, so that has. Now, this is about 4%, 3 or 4% of the butterflies are in the western part of the United States. And there's about less than 1% are go down into Florida. So the bulk of the butterflies, and that's today, that's about 140 million of them fly from Northern Canada. And the reason that we have this, the line ends up above the United States, it used to be pretty much right at the border of the United States and Canada. But as things have warmed up, the growth of the flowers that they need and all of these things has moved further north, so they have to move north. Now they have to travel farther, so they have to fly faster. So there's things going on that they have to figure out and deal with. And this is what it looks like. They are just covered with it. Now, there's some interesting statistics. Since a butterfly weighs 0.017 ounces, it takes 57 of them to make an ounce. It takes 912 of them to make a pound. And if you put 1,400,000 of them, you get 11,000 pounds of butterflies. They're going to be up in these trees. And so this is what they look like. And if you notice this, what do you notice about these? They're all females. There's not a male in that picture. Okay? Now, they're the main predator of monarch butterflies. But their range, guess where their range is? The Michoacán State, against the mountains, right where the monarch butterflies winter over. Now they eat, and they're responsible for eating up to 5% of the total number of butterflies. That means they eat roughly 5 million of them over the winter. Now you ask, how can they do that? Well, they do them one after the other, but they happen to tolerate the poison that is in the butterfly. The goosebeak, the black-headed goosebeak, is the most voracious and really could care less about these butterflies. He just eats them whole. And basically it flies up and can eat the abdomen, thorax, and head right out between the wings, and he's done. Now, this black-backed oriole is a little more sophisticated because his digestive system won't handle the poison that's in the crust, the outer shell of the abdomen. And so you notice he's got a very pointed beak. He just slits them open and sucks the stuff out of the middle. And that keeps him from getting too much poison. Great stuff. But there are the two that can handle it. Now, your worldview matters. I'm just going to touch on this. You see, if you're going to have a Christian worldview or a creation worldview, it starts by believing faith in God and the authority of His Word. Now, we've had to redefine some things. It's like when people say, yeah, I'm saved. We have to say, okay, now what do they mean? Are you saved from what? And how are you saved? Why are you saved? Who are you saved? Or I have faith in. Oh, I believe in God. Well, you know, be careful. The devils believe in God too, and they tremble. But we need to know, do people really believe by faith in God and have trusted Jesus Christ as their Savior? And do they accept His Word as authoritative? It is popular now to say that, well, maybe the first 11 chapters of Genesis aren't quite literal. Do you think God would agree with that? I don't. And the unbelieving world, they start with man and his imaginations, inventions, and interpretations, and that's why we have evolution. And as I was reading some of this material, I wanted to give you both a warning and a help. Is you have to be discerning when you read periodicals and articles of any kind, but especially scientific articles, to distinguish facts from fiction. I was just reading along, and all of a sudden, this line just went right past me. Yes, and this evolved in this species so that in their mating ritual, they give off a noise, and that noise causes the males to get out of his way, and it attracts the female. And it said, they evolved this so that it would work both ways. Really? You see, God is the only one that could create them, and they're not giving God, the Creator, the credit for what He's made. This is an amazing. Now, that's just a very quick overview, and it is amazing what these creatures can do and how they do it, and it's all because of the wonderful and glorious God that we have.